right, guys, welcome to another episode of The Rant. We've got some two special guests. We've got accountants. We wanted to add some spice to our video, so we brought some accountants, but these are rockstar accountants, so it's gonna be a little more of an interesting conversation today. So from, I'm gonna say this wrong again, Zeifmins. We can edit that afterwards. David and Jonah
never
are
had
here.
An edit.
Sorry?
You've never had an
We've never had an edit, yeah. So I'm actually just going to edit with text.
Okay.
Yeah. You can click on it. So David and Jonah are here, and we're going to get into it. So guys, it's August. It's the end of August. For us on the real estate side, it's generally a little bit, historically a little slower. What does it look like on the accounting side? I know you guys are in different areas. I don't know if you maybe want to give us a little background on each of you, then let me know what August looks like for you guys.
Now, we do a lot of, you know, real estate type work, accounting and tax. August generally is a slow month in the accounting world, but, you know, it's always a great time for people that don't have some compliance filings. If they want to come in and talk or chat or just meet us, it's a great time because usually things are, you know, much, much quieter. So that's always great. But I just want to interrupt and say, or change topic. And you usually accounts are called nerds and you call us rock stars.
That's right. We've already had a few conversations.
That's
the
best compliment I've ever had. I love him. Thank you. It was worth coming here just to be called a rock star.
Okay, we're done. We don't need to do this anymore.
No, change the business card, rock star.
I love that. So that was really great. Thank you.
Yeah. I think people may have a different idea of accounts. You know, you're looking at numbers. We're looking at numbers all day too. So I don't see why, you know, we could be called nerds too. We're just doing math, basically. I think the difference is we're more on the sales side, I suppose.
Yeah, but we just have a stereotype of being nerds. And I'm cool with that, but I love the rockstar comment.
Yeah, well, that's you know, from the conversation we had, we were getting into coffee and a bunch of other stuff. So I think you guys are awesome. But so I'm just diverting.
Thank you. Thank you.
But you want to give me a little bit of background as well?
So, obviously we're both pretty much focused on tax. You know, heavy focus on tax mixed with real estate, tax minimization strategies, stuff like that. A lot of focus on high net worth and really, you know, about saving money. Like, I think people look at us like, yeah, that's cool.
Well, I think anyone who can save money is a rock star,
exactly,
right? So, like,
exactly.
I don't know why anyone would say any otherwise.
Exactly. I think it's just me.
No,
it's
just you guys have the wrong mentality of your role.
It's the compliance aspect. When it comes down to, you know, you're just kind of doing the numbers every year, whatever. Yeah, it's nerdy.
You know, the nerds are the CRA money, guys. You know? No offense to any of our CRA clients, but those are the guys who...
Yeah, what was that show, Big Bang Theory, where the nerds came out? Like, all of a sudden, being a nerd became cool, right? So it was kind of a good stamp to know that I could be cool. But everything is great. It's a pleasure to be here. Your offices are really cool, if I may say. I love the windows and the vibe, and it's really great to be here.
Tent City, yeah. So you guys can't see this on camera, but if you feel free to drive by across from our office.
It would be phenomenal if you could turn the camera.
Yeah. Maybe we could do like a photo that we can link to this video, but... We've got, I think, three or four tents that have perched out outside of our office. We don't know if they're protesting or what they're going to do. But
they want your coffee.
They're here for coffee. But, we're in a unique spot here. We've got a beautiful ravine in front of us. And these guys have just sort of set up a tent and they're camping there, I think. Or maybe they're protesting. I don't know. Have you guys – I was in Montreal a month ago, and they have this big movement around the world to save the planet. But they're sort of really, I don't know the name of the movement. I've got to remember, go back and check it out. But my wife and I were walking downtown Montreal, and right at the main intersection, they had a bunch of people just laying on the floor. It was a rush hour around 4 or 5 o'clock. And they were just protesting and bringing awareness to the damage that, you know, we're doing to the environment and the lack of government intervention. And there was SWAT team of army. There was probably 100 police officers and army people there. And, we were in Europe as well. We saw a little bit of protest, you know. So I feel like there's a lot of protesting going on in the world. Maybe I've just been exposed to it very recently.
It's a nice time to protest.
And who knows? And you're right.
I don't think they're protesting.
Yeah, I don't think they're protesting because they don't come out of the tent. There's nothing going on over there. But would be great for some feedback there. But all right, so let's get into some tax questions here. So we deal with a lot of investors, real estate investors. And you were mentioning something a little earlier that we're very fond of. So we always tell clients, look, I understand that you want to go out and make an offer and be very aggressive with your offer, but you need to have first of all, have the right team, you know, both on the real estate side, on the financing side, and also on the accountant and the legal side, to ensure that you've covered all your bases, you have all the information ready to go. So when an opportunity presents itself, you can move very quickly. Very often we find ourselves on the last minute end of that transaction where it's like, hey, I haven't spoken to you yet, but I've already made an offer and I've got 2 or 3 days to sort of finance it.
Right.
And what that forces us to do is put together very quickly.
That's actually a lot of lead time. We usually come in.
We come in after the
fact. I bought a property 3 months ago. What do I, you know?
It's closing in a week. Yeah, so yeah. I guess what I want to emphasize, and we've always emphasized the priority on what we call pre-positioning. So not a pre-approval where you punch in on an app how much you make, very basic questions that give you a quick number that hasn't been vetted or audited by anyone really. You're the auditor essentially. And client, it's good for our business because clients will go make an offer and say, my calculator said I'm qualified for $500,000. We say, no, well, you forgot about this, this, and this. You're actually only good for $200K. Now that deal falls apart or you've already committed to it. Now you have to move forward with it and your financing options are more expensive. So we're always like, you need to have a pre-positioning conversation with the financing partner. But on the accounting side as well, especially with our investor clients who are buying investment properties and debating whether they should put in a holding company or not, or maybe they're self-employed and using corporate funds, you could save tens of thousands of dollars by having a conversation with your accounting partner before getting into all this to ensure that you have the right strategy. So how does that come into play? Do you guys find that?
Yeah, I see it all the time. It happens all the time where people, they bought properties a year ago and they've never reported them or they're just starting. They have to report them now for the first time and they come to us and, you know, it's very clear based on their situation because everybody's different. You're employed, you're self-employed, you have corporations, you're wealthy, you're not so wealthy, you borrowed a lot, and there's different ways to hold it. And choosing the right way for you could save you a lot of money in the short term, the long term. Deferral, tax deferral is huge. Compliance costs. It's so important just to have that phone call. Like, you don't have to sign up with a new accountant, a special real estate accountant. Just have that phone call. Say, my situation is this. I'm thinking about buying, you know, a property. What are my options? And you can really find most, I'd like to think most accounts, you can give them a shout and they'll have a chat with you a half hour and you can save oodles and
like
oodles of time.
Minutes, you can
yeah.
save tons of money.
It's just money or just make sure because, you know, you can, usually you can change it after the fact, but you have to go through a lawyer and do all these. It's just annoying. Just get it done right. Even when you're thinking about buying a property, before you even put the money down, you put an offer in, talk to somebody and you'll see that they can, you know, give you ideas that you didn't think about, consider. And in the long run, it's usually better because, you know, it's, we see it all the time. They come in and the property's been bought, but it wasn't bought in the right
structure. So going back to
restructure
from a non-holding company to a holding company now triggers all these sort of expenses.
There could be, sometimes there could be land transfer tax, which people think about income tax, but there's all other taxes. There's HST, there's land transfer tax. There's all sorts of different stuff. And even if there's no tax, there's just the compliance with the lawyers, the accountant. It's paperwork and necessary.
To add to that, a great, you know, you don't see it often, but a great little clause just to put into any purchase sale agreement is assignability. Allow the agreement to actually be assigned to a corporation, another entity. That little, just little kind of clause can really just save a ton of headache, you know?
We get that a lot where at the time we get the file, we've advised them towards maybe a holding company strategy. Going back to the seller and saying, hey, can you change this to assign it to my company?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, wait, I don't want to do it. You need to increase this. A deposit or whatever it is, and you're right, it's such a simple thing that generally will go overlooked.
Yeah, that's
an immaterial item. So that's a good point. What is a pet peeve of yours? So our pet peeve is, you know, mortgage rules have changed, let's be honest. And we've been telling everyone, look, there's no point in fighting the banks and saying, why do I have to give you this? Why do I have to give you that? And the reason is, look, you're borrowing $1 million or $500,000. Probably not the end of the world that you have to give a pay stub or letter of employment or whatever it is that you need. Just, you know, give it to us. If it gets unreasonable, of course, we'll try to fight back and make it work for you. But at the end of the day, we need documents. And our pet peeve has always been clients challenge the documents that all the banks are asking us for.
Why do they need this?
And then the problem is, look, you know, we have gotten to the point where we don't want to proceed with a file unless we have a decent amount of documents. Because what has happened and where a lot of agents drop the ball in our industry is they just collect a pay stub. They haven't asked where the down payment's coming from or all these other things. The file gets approved with all this massive list of conditions that haven't been looked at yet. And then it falls apart because of, oh, I forgot to tell you, the down payment's coming from North Korea or some country that's not going to be accepted by many banks in terms of...
You get down payments from North Korea?
No, I'm just trying to think of the most like extreme situation we could get. But, you know, the banks will in many cases not accept money from overseas, from certain countries. Right. And if we haven't looked at that yet, that could hurt your deal. Or we just found that you're on probation. So your 100K salary is actually not 100K because you just started 2 months ago.
And I'm not on probation.
So, you know.
I understand, yeah.
Hopefully not.
I hear that, yeah.
So that's our pet peeve.
What are you doing in those cases?
Sorry?
What do you see? What's to be done?
So what we've implemented across our team is...
let's say if a guy comes to you and says, I was with a previous broker, the guy's awful. You know, here's what happened. My closing is in a week, and this is my situation. Can you fix it?
Yeah, so we have three levels of financing that we'll tell clients. So we've got the A stuff that you're familiar with, like a bank, big bank, a credit.
Okay, you'll go to the alt. You'll go to an alternative.
We have alt and we have private. So if it doesn't work with an A lender, it just doesn't work at all because someone dropped the ball there. We'll explore the B lending side, which is generally 1% higher, more or less, in terms of rate. It's a short-term solution generally. And if everything is just a mess, we always have private lending available to us, which is going to be more on the higher cost for sure. So there are more options. Ideally, we can avoid the last two and try to keep clients on the A side. But, you know, getting into self-employed people, and you guys can relate to this, self-employed people don't declare the amount of money that they actually earn. Generally, that's not how it works. So if you make 100,
never.
Yeah, which is fine. Legally, you can do that. But it also works. It's a double-edged sword on the financing side. So if I legitimately make 100 grand, but I declare 30, don't be surprised. And the max loan you're going to get is 100K.
It's the guy that wants the financing. It's always a double, like in accounting or tax, you know, they want to show statements, financial statements that are strong to look to get a loan or investors, but they don't want to pay tax.
Correct.
So we see that, forget the real estate side, it's just in anything that it's always, you have to decide what's more important to you. And if you want that loan, you're going to have to pay a little bit of tax, you know, especially if you're in a corporation, your rate might be as low as 13%-ish. So it's worth it to just pay the tax.
You know what I tell clients often? Especially the investor clients, not so much on the primary residence. I like to do the slightly more expensive mortgages on the rental properties.
For the flexibility?
Correct. So I just say, look, you make 100 grand, you and your wife make 200 grand, but you show 50. That's great. You're saving tens of thousands of dollars of taxes, but you're not going to get financing for this rental property. So why don't we consider a B lender, if that's your only option? They'll charge you 4.whatever%.
But you'll save on the taxes.
We'll get it done because they don't care about what you declared. In fact, they won't even ask for a T1. They want to know how much your business makes, which is just bank statements. We'll get it done with a B lender. You can continue to show very little of income. And now
I hope CRA's not watching.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is legitimate. Legitimately saying the client deposits 10 grand a month. Here's his income, but he only declares 30, which is all legit. We get you to a B lender, which will have a slightly higher rate monthly payment, and you'll probably pay a few thousand dollars of interest, but you've just saved tens of thousands of dollars of interest.
Right.
And so like that's the conversation we have.
For sure. And to take, so your pet peeve kind of flows into to my pet peeve in that, you know, you'll kind of meet a client and it, you know, it doesn't matter how big the client is or small, it can just be, you know, not much going on. But if we're going to devise a plan for you, we have to know everything. Right. So sometimes we come up with a plan and, you know, you're like, well, client doesn't want to give you the information. We'd like to know that there's information there. So we'll set up a plan and we'll be like, well, hey, we didn't know that you own this property already, or we didn't know that you already owe this company money.
It changes everything.
It changes everything. We spent, we got the lawyer involved and we got it. We set everything up for you and we came up with a great plan, but now the plan's not so good because you didn't tell us about this. You know, it's so important with your advisors to let them know the information. They don't have to use the information. They can pretend they didn't hear the information.
I like to say it's a filter. Give me everything I need to know. I am on your team here.
Right.
I will filter out what is necessary and required to make everybody happy.
We just had a client. It's a pretty substantial client, and we underwent this whole plan, you know, that, you know, to fix things. They weren't doing things so correctly, and we fixed them up, and the lawyer was involved, and it was wonderful. And then 2 months later, we happened to hear that they owned another property. Well, you have to, we're very nice. I think that we're pretty nice people. We're open people. Yeah. And we just let us know so we can do it properly. So what I would say is, whether you're speaking to your legal, you know, your lawyer, your accountant, anybody, your mortgage advisor,
doctor,
your agent, your doctor, definitely your doctor.
Don't lie to your doctor.
Give them all the information. I like to think that professionals are trained enough that you don't have to feel bad. Like sometimes they feel guilty. Oh, I don't feel
bad. We're not commenting on you behind the scenes.
Yeah,
we
can be thinking in our head. We can, after you leave, you know, talk about it, laugh about it, right? But we're not going to it's so important that we know everything. So you shouldn't get over the embarrassment. There's no embarrassment. Let us know, or just not want to say, or kind of, or maybe they knew it was there, but they didn't feel like digging up the paperwork. Let us know. Let your professional know, because that will save frustration, time, and
if they're professional, again, this is irrelevant. Sometimes clients will say, oh, I don't want to give you that bank statement because I'm in overdraft. It's like, I don't care that you're in overdraft. My job
everybody's
is to get a solution
to that.
Everyone's in overdraft. Yeah. You know, we don't talk about this at the office. It's like, here's a solution. I want to move on to the next person to make sure you're happy. I'm not commenting. Yeah. And most professionals are going to treat it the exact same way.
Because so everybody's in the same boat, like in the professional offices and your accountants or lawyers. Like you see tax returns all the time. Like you think you're the only one that had a loss or didn't make money.
We're not saying I've seen more than this.
Report stuff. It happens. Okay, let's deal with it. Let's see how we can make a plan going forward to correct, or let just give us information so we can make an educated, decision on what we're going
to do. I think it's a good analogy to look at, like a doctor. You know, if you've been to the hospital recently, like nurses have seen so much things and are almost immune to it that they can have a very horrible conversation on someone's condition with just sort of a cold face, because it's almost like this is normal. This is
their life.
And for us, it can be very emotional. Same thing on our side. You know, we see these, I've seen all kinds of crazy applications, and, you know, I've seen the most messed up credit and great credit, and there's no comment. It's really just, let's find a solution and just move forward.
Absolutely.
So it's not.
I'm down with that.
What I want to ask you. So I got sidetracked. I had a question. I don't remember. You were going to throw something in. I don't know if you wanted to. If it
I don't remember. I would touch on that, but my pet peeve is, when they're same thing, they don't tell you the whole story, but it's that they're dual citizens. They're also Americans. It's the worst.
Oh, that's
yeah. Come up with a whole plan, and at the end of the meeting, you know, you can go through a few hours. Could be multiple meetings. They go, by the way, I don't know if this is an issue or not, but my mom is American. You know, and I was born in the U.S., but I moved here,
when I was two, I never filed there. Yeah.
And suddenly the whole thing's out the window. Yeah. And it's just,
What's interesting. People are so hesitant to provide basic information, especially when we needed to process and make decisions, but they're very eager and open to put everything on Instagram and Facebook. Like literally they know everything about you.
Yeah.
You ever wonder why you're on any of these websites like Facebook and Instagram, and they're saying, hey, you need this cream. It's like, how does it know I need this cream? It's because you probably buy it from Amazon and they know all of this stuff about you. So asking for basic stuff, like, are you a citizen of the US? Like, come on, guys.
But you know what? And that's why if I meet someone for the first time, that's what I learned the hard way. It's one of the first questions I'll ask them is, are you American?
You've
asked that question.
So many times.
Not that many times, but now I think it's just, and I think all professionals out there listening, I don't know if it applies so much if you're a lawyer, but for accountants or tax advisors, definitely ask that question, because there's a whole can of worms that can open there, and sometimes you have to speak to, like, we know, we do Canadian tax, we know U.S. tax, but there are U.S. tax professionals that sometimes you have to speak to.
Okay.
And sometimes also you just want to make sure that's done right. So I would advise professionals to ask that question.
That's kind of like a bankruptcy question. It's like, I can get your file to the 99% complete, but if I find out maybe through a credit check that you have a bankruptcy, can be a deal breaker if it wasn't asked up front. It's like, do you have a bankruptcy in the last few years? If the answer is yes, then we're going to have to immediately shift our plan to these options.
I was going to take kind of the conversation a little different, which is I'm seeing a lot, I'm sure you're seeing it also, David, a lot of people with Airbnb rentals.
Oh, yeah.
Tons.
Oh, yeah,
it's all the rage right now. How are you guys seeing the debt side of that? Like it's almost constantly the guy comes and says, I'm buying this property. It's normally, five cap, but I'm going to make it an Airbnb. Suddenly,
everyone's always talking about cap rate. Like it's the only option, the only metric. But so the Airbnb. So, lenders are generally always more conservative. I think everybody knows that. So, just to kind of backtrack before I answer your question, when the micro condos started coming out, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, where things started getting below the 500 square feet, most lenders would say, we will not finance these. You're going to have to put more money down. You can do 5 down on these or 20. Maybe you need 35 or more down. And there's a lot of lenders that just didn't touch them.
Even for a principal residence?
Correct. But again, we're going back like 6, 7, 8 years ago when they were like the first ones out there. And the rationale for banks were they're less marketable. So if we have to take over this mortgage and sell it, there's not many of these out there. So we're concerned about the marketability of it. Now, you know, good luck finding something for $500,000 that's 500 square feet, right? So now it's very common. So lenders have adapted, and they generally will all be okay with micro condos, I think as low as 300, 350 square feet, right? So getting to the Airbnb stuff.
So just to touch on that, I'm not even just seeing with Airbnb, I'm seeing very unique, or rather just with the small condos. I'm seeing guys who are buying a multi-unit, you know, triplex, and they're making it Airbnb.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. It's,
the income potential is amazing. You know, there's a lot of regulatory issues with the city and this sort of bylaws.
Everyone kind
of
ignores that, like the 10 people.
But,
like,
you know, we had a whole rant on this. We said, look, you know, Toronto, we have 300,000 plus Canadians and immigrants coming into Canada, of which about a third or so come to the GTA area, and we're not supplying enough housing for all these people. So there's a housing issue. So when people ask, what do you think of the prices in Toronto? Are we in a bubble? It's like, no, like this basic supply and demand. I think we live in a bubble because we're almost very different than the rest of the world.
Is Thornhill a bubble?
So I think that some of the issues that could affect the rest of the country are going to be, to some extent, minimized in larger cities because there's a huge demand for housing, and you know, this is where the jobs are at. So I think that conversation is a completely different one. But I think things like Airbnb, we were talking about laneway houses and all these sort of unique and creative ways to get people to purchase homes but also provide housing is great. And I think the city councilors and you know, the individuals who are regulating all these things should look into this and make it easier to allow this. So if I'm trying to get into Toronto and I could barely, you know, and into a house, it's going to cost me almost $1 million in Toronto, and you know, I'm a brand new grad that just got a first job, probably making 70 grand. You know, maybe between me and my partner, we're making 150 grand. That's very difficult to get financing on $1 million home, especially when you have to come up with a pretty large down payment. But if you can introduce ways to allow rental units, maybe Airbnb, laneway housing, allow these sort of situations to not only supply housing, but also make it easier and more affordable, I think you're kind of helping the economy.
Well, that's the whole purpose-built rentals right now.
Correct.
It's all the,
and I think to some extent, Hamilton actually, I know, has loosened up how easy it is to turn things into a legal duplex and triplex. Yep. Toronto is, I think they've loosened up how laneway housing is
definitely allowed. Laneway. We're seeing a lot of
I actually reached out to a whole bunch of lenders to try and get up to speed on laneway housing. And most banks will not consider the rental income from a laneway house. Most banks will also not consider Airbnb income.
Correct.
They're thinking
and that goes back to the full circle. What are you guys doing about that?
So I wouldn't say we have to be creative, but generally what you're saying to a bank is, hey, this property is vacant. If you were to complete an appraisal and a market rent, it'll tell you that the market rent for that unit is $1,500, for example. That's what the banks will use to determine the rentability of that property to qualify you. If you could turn that $1,500 into $3,000 or $4,000 because you're doing an Airbnb, then the bank says, well, worst case scenario, you can rent this at a $1,500. So we're going to use that to qualify you.
Is this at an A-lender?
Yeah. Some of the credit unions are a little bit more keen on Airbnb. If there's history of Airbnb rental income in that property or that area, some banks will even allow a 2-year history of Airbnb monthly income to be used. So instead of a $1,500 amount, maybe we're using $2 or $2,500, which simplifies a little bit. Most banks aren't on that bandwagon yet. Most of the big banks will not do that because they see it as too risky. They don't want people to be over-leveraged. You know, you guys have probably noticed financing for rental properties has become more and more complicated for rentals and for first-time buyers.
Especially with multiple properties. It's the first one, you get it.
Yeah.
Then the second, especially this whole Airbnb thing, you try to get financing for a second property and it's Airbnb, it's good luck.
Good luck, yeah, because then it's like, so we have this whole blueprint concept where we say, you know, generally most banks will get you to 4 or 5 rentals as long as you fit their criteria. As soon as you get to that 6th rental, then most banks will say, no more lending for you. We don't care that you're making $1 million. Yep. No more lending, generally, unless it's an exception.
No, we're definitely seeing that, like 100%.
And what we're doing is we're taking this strategic approach and say, look, we work with 60 plus lenders across the country. Let's take you to the lenders that'll give you that easy financing initially, and then let's move you to the other lenders. And they're not B lenders or private. They're still A lenders to some extent, credit unions, this type of thing, who will give you that 6th to 10th property. Sometimes we'll introduce holding company strategies where let's buy everything in a holding company, the first 4 or 5, whatever we can do. Now let's buy everything in a personal, because now we can just sort of stretch out how many properties you own, because this holding company is legally owned by this property is legally owned by your holding company.
And you're seeing that okay to exceed the 5, even if there's personal guarantees involved?
Well, most lenders, it's not on your tax return. they're going to ask for a tax return.
They're
going to pull a title search. All these things show no indication. And, you know, many lenders will say to us off the record, if it's in a holding company, we don't want to know about it. If it's not on their T1 general, if we do a title search, it's not on their on the title search, and it's not on their credit bureau, and there's no indication of a personal guarantee. It's kind of like owning a building. You know, if you own a commercial building, you can have 10 commercial buildings, and that's not going to hurt your ability generally to access regular residential financing or personal names. Sort of the same idea. The banks treat it separately. They assume that it's being self-supported, and because it's not on your credit bureau, it doesn't exist to them.
Very cool.
That's kind of the general idea.
Cool. Just on kind of a tip, you should all know, I see this a lot, something people don't really know. On Airbnb, you might have to charge HST, maybe. And sometimes people, you'll see their tax returns and they have all this Airbnb income. Well, did you charge HST on the rent? You don't necessarily have to, but you might have to charge HST. So keep in mind, you should get that looked at before you start to use Airbnb.
Speak to your accountant.
There you go.
Don't mess around.
There you go. No.
You're putting a bunch of crazy people in there.
The last thing you want is you made all this money and you want to take a vacation to Spain or this, or you bought property, you know, number two. And then you're like, hey, I should have collected HST on this. Now CRE's coming after me.
Well, that couples with the concept of people are buying these pre-builds with the intention to rent on Airbnb. So they don't have a long-term lease. So it'll impact your HST rental rebate.
HST is an area in real estate.
This guy right here, HST expert.
You know what? That's one component of financing that messes everyone up. People buy these new construction condos or whatever, and they've got the down payment, and they're like, oh, I didn't know I've got some component of HST. Especially if it's a rental, it's a deal breaker for some of them.
It's an area that people think about income tax to an extent, land transfer tax. But HST is a whole area where, like, when it comes to, you know, to real estate, whether you're buying or selling or renting, it's this whole other area that people don't think about till after the fact. And, you know, CRA, it's very easy for CRA just to see, hey, I see this income. They just have to ask the question. And then you can be screwed because, you know, you never thought about it. And now you have all this money that you have to give CRA. They'll just go back and say, hey, you made this money. You should have charged HST. Give us a check. And they'll come after you. Yeah, so get that. That's
it hurts your financing too. If you owe the CRA money, it's very difficult to get financing because the CRA will always take precedence over any loan or charge or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you owe the CRA some money and you're saying, hey, I owe the CRA $100,000, which sometimes is as a result of poor accounting advice or just lack of accounting advice, you accumulated all these properties, you probably didn't declare any rental income, and now you're being audited and you owe a lot of money, which happens quite a bit. And the lenders are saying, look, we'll refinance this and help you pay this off, but you have to pay it off first.
Absolutely.
So normally we're going to have to go to a private lender who's going to wipe all that out, then take it to a regular bank who will allow you to refinance it. It's a big deal.
And HST is usually pretty easy stuff. Like, it shouldn't be so difficult to deal with. Like income tax, it might be more complex to deal with, but HST usually, you know, I'm renting it out. I gotta just charge HST. Pretty simple stuff. So that's an easy question to ask, like the dual citizen type of stuff. Just get that out of the way. Should I be charging? Ask somebody, and you can save yourself headaches, time, and money.
Well,
right?
One thing I wanted to mention is we were all talking about how August is generally a little bit slower. We were talking about some of the stuff we've been doing this summer. Do you feel that September is always like this back to school mentality, whether you're in school or not, whether you have kids or not?
August is the worst. You always dread school. Like, even I'm dreading school now.
Well, you've got kids though, but do you feel, I don't know if you have kids. I didn't ask.
Yeah.
You have kids. Okay. But I think that even if you didn't have kids, you're going into September, there's this mentality of, okay, the summer is over. If you're in Toronto, we have the X. That's my metric of the summer is over. We have the X now. That's the exhibition for anyone who's in Vancouver out in Alberta. But just the idea of going into September, I feel like it almost, you hit restart and now you're sort of re-energized to go into whatever it is, if it's a project at work or whatever it is you're doing. I just find like August has this sort of summer vibe. Like, hey, we've got this very limited, beautiful, warm weather. As soon as you get into September, we're back to business.
Yeah, the office is quieter, vacation time, you know, people, they go like, it's much quieter, especially August, like I said before. Come September, usually people, you know, the guys that would come around 9:30, they're coming more on time now. It just sort of gets back to business. Usually it's like, it's a process, right?
Got it.
It's a process. But yeah, usually come September, things kind of.
The reason I mention it is I find that anytime I need accounting advice, it's generally after I've done my tax return, but my accountant hates me for that because he's like, look, you're literally filing it like weeks before it's due.
That's not good.
A million other things going on. So the reason I mention that is it's a great time to get a review done you know, towards the end of the year, you guys are probably less busy, more willing to have a, I mean, I'm sure you're more willing throughout the year, but at that time, it's a little easier to schedule an appointment to have a proper review going into the end of the year and tying up any loose ends and also getting yourself
good for next year. Like just on what you said, like I like to think that, you know, accountants, you don't just go do your taxes in April and see you later till next year. Like you should always feel comfortable to shoot them off an email, a text message, a phone call. Like you shouldn't just, you should, it should be more than just your account. You should be, it's relationship. It should be a relationship. So you should always feel free to go and call your accountant and just, you know, and maybe the accountant should even call you up, you know, every few months and say, hey man, what's a, you know, going on. So yeah, it's always a good time to reach out to your accountant. You shouldn't feel bad about it.
The calls I get are more like, hey, I'm at the dealership. Do you think it's okay if I buy this Mercedes?
We survive. You're going to mess up my finances. We survive. Yeah. But accountants should be more than just the guy that, you know, does your income taxes. You should always feel that he should know or she should know you and your whole strategy or what's going on. And that's definitely something that we push, that you should just know your accountant as like as a friend, right? So you should give us, you know, you should call your accountant in August and September and October. You know, it should always be something that you feel comfortable calling.
The last thing I want to touch on, and you know, I've been doing this for quite a while, and I always find that whenever there's fees involved, you know, in our business generally there's no fees, but sometimes there are fees depending on what we're doing. In your business, obviously, there's fees.
You guys
as well.
Do this for free?
We do all this for free. You know, when we're dealing with things like commercial and private, you know, it's a different sort of structure, but generally what we do has no cost. But when there is a cost component, you know, in your industry, for example, do you find that? Because I always get people don't value these things, right? I feel like, and this is probably not a popular comment, but I don't care.
Say it. We get this all the time.
I feel like, you know, people will spend money on silly things that have zero value very often. And it's like, look, you're going to speak to an, I don't know what your fees are, and it doesn't really matter, but let's say a couple $100 for an hourly chat, if that's where you're charging. The amount of value you can get, whether you're speaking with an accountant or a lawyer or whoever, is massive versus going in, and we see this all the time, going out, buying real estate, zero advice, sort of winging it, and you're out all this money because you were, you know, I'm going to say it, you're too cheap to spend the money and get the right advice. I
mean, yeah, so
do you get that hesitation?
Like, so two things on that comment. Number one is if you're buying real estate and it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, that if you do have to call an accountant, then, you know, if it's a 10-minute chat, I hope that they wouldn't even charge you for, you know, for like the phone call. But if you are going to invest time with an accountant, it's like less than a half of 1% of the total value of the place that you're buying. Yeah. So you should think about it like that. It's a very not, you know, material charge, number one. Number two is what we find is because people go, they buy a car, they buy a shirt in the store, they leave with a bag. I got my car. When it comes to legal or accounting or any professional advice, they're not getting something, right? So, you know, they might not value.
You get a bill.
Yeah. But so that's kind of what's important, that what we're providing, you can't take with you. You just take it with you in yourself, but you're not.
But I think that little 10-minute conversation or 5-minute conversation should almost be the catalyst to kind of see that, hey, there's value here. Like, I've just spoke to you for 5 years and I've given you some very basic advice that is going to save you a lot of money. You know, I think that should be rationalized, but people don't see it that way.
Yeah.
I think we're spoiled as a society in Canada.
Yeah, I think so too. But I don't think accountants should be charging for 10-minute phone calls also.
I don't think so. Yeah. I'm saying they should be charging for what they're offering as a full service conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think that people should consider that. Like, you know, here's one thought I had. You know, we've got, for the most part, free healthcare. If I needed to get some sort of surgery done, generally I'm not paying for it. But if I was paying for it, if I was living in the US, for example, and they're like, this guy's going to charge you $1,000. He's a professional. He's really, really good. This guy just got out of school. He's got a rickety hand. It'll charge you $150. You know, obviously you're going to go for the more expensive guy when there's no cost involved, or when you know that it's going to bring more value. It's the same thing with what we're doing here. And when there is a cost, it's probably because it's worth it.
Yeah.
And I think a few minutes to understand the value that person can bring to the table generally save you a lot of money. And, you know, there's, on a regular basis, there's still people every week who will reach out to us and say, I bought a property, we've never spoken, the last person messed up my file, can you make it work at the last minute? And that last minute decision can sometimes be a very expensive, thousands of dollars decision.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, it's very unfortunate. So that's how, is there anything you guys want to leave or anything?
I would add on that, on the sales side, it's constant. You get the call after the sale. And then it's kind of, you got to work back. If you call, you know, either of us or your accountant
in advance
before the sale, the amount that you can save from the planning is just—it's incredible. Like, it'll pay for itself 10 times over.
Yeah, I mean, you're spending $500,000, $1 million on a piece of real estate. At the end of the day, investing a small amount of money, even just to that little tip you mentioned, the assignment clause. Just that little two-minute conversation you could have told someone on the phone could have saved them
$1,000. Don't worry, we'll send you the bill.
Yeah. So I think I did want to leave off. We always reiterate this. You know, get yourself with the right team. Have these conversations in advance, because with real estate especially, things happen fast, especially as we move into September. I find that September to November is still very, very active. You want to know that I found this property, I'm ready to transact, and I know where I stand from the financing, the legal, the accounting, and you know, on my real estate side, and I can make a very quick decision versus I'm just going to buy this and we'll figure it out afterwards, and it's going to cost you tons of money.
That's a killer. It's a
very simple, simple analogy. Guys, thanks so much for
thanks for having us. It was a real pleasure to be here. It was a very good time. I enjoyed it.
Awesome.
I enjoyed the tent city.
Tent City across the street. We're going to tag that somewhere. Guys, thank you so much. See you next time.
Thank you.
Peace.